This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show.
Right circle, Garland. Again to Hughes, top of the point. Shot tip, they score! Quinn Hughes got it through on net. Joshua and Lindholm were parked in the slot. At least one of them got a touch on it, and the Canucks tie the game at two. Shipperkov, who couldn't center out of the right corner, so dumps it back behind the net for Niederreiter. Now to Shipperkov, right in front, he scores! First NHL goal for Nikita Shipperkov in his first career game gives the Jets a 3-2 lead.
With instant reaction from the players and coaches.
Hughes, left circle, cutting into the corner. Stops at the hash marks, trying to rewind pass, picked off in the slot. Here's a chance for the empty net, they score! Cole Perfetti! Perfetti fires his second of the night into the yawning cage.
Have your say on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks lose their final regular season game of the campaign 4-2 against the Jets in Winnipeg, but the playoffs are next. This game didn't really matter as far as where the Canucks would find themselves in their playoff opponents. They have the Predators in the first round, and that begins on Sunday, which will be made official pretty soon. But this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show, presented by the number 5 Orange on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650, and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. Get your thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll free, 1-888-275-0650. The most important thing about this game was get through it without any injuries, and that's exactly what we saw here tonight. And honestly, like, we can talk about the game. We're going to bring in Randy in a second, and we have a lot of time, but let's also talk about the season that has been in the regular season. So let us know what your favorite moments of the regular season are, what we're looking forward to when it comes to the playoffs, and what we think of the Canucks after this 82 game campaign. But let's tie a bow on this game first. And Randy, I mean, this was a no hitter outside of Nikita Zadorov, who did not get the memo, throwing a couple big hits in this game, getting into a Niederreiter as well. He was very physical and active in this game, but overall it had the feel of a preseason game, did it not?
Especially the first 20 minutes of this game, guys.
Oh,
I think there was a little bit more, maybe a little tighter hockey in the second period. You could see some intensity, whether it was Zadorov, maybe a couple other plays of attacking the blue paint a little bit more. But, guys, the opening 20 minutes was pretty, I think it was played at about 70%, right? Like, that's what it felt like in terms of the speed. But, you know, the key coming out of this one is two things. You get a little bit more playing time for Thatcher Demko, which is nice. And you get out of this game. Nobody's injured. Nobody's hurt. Nobody left the bench. That's the most important thing, as you can now prep for Nashville on the weekend, whatever day it is. It's presumably Sunday. And, you know, that's really the most important part here.
And a couple of guys competed hard. Mark Friedman sliding to block a shot, competing along the ice, staying engaged in that play, and some guys get a little bit of rust off themselves.
Oh, for sure. And you want to see that, right? With Noah Juulsen, hadn't played a game since March 31st, and with Mark Friedman, he'd played a little bit more recently, his 7-minute effort against Anaheim. But outside of that, guys, you want to get a few of these guys feeling good about themselves. You know, whether it's Phil DiGiuseppe, whether it's Niels Omon, who had an opportunity in this game as well, because there are going to be opportunities in the playoffs. If there's injuries, if there's, you know, trying to shake up a lineup, ideally you don't want to be hitting that in the first round, but you never know. You never know what you're going to end up, you know, really having in front of you. So you want to make sure that some of these guys are confident, they're ready to go when their number is called.
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of hitting some numbers too, Connor Garland opened up the scoring for the Canucks, hit 20 goals on the campaign, only the second time in his career that he hit 20 goals, but also the first time as a Canuck that he got to the 20-goal mark. And what a turnaround it's been for him, especially in the second half of the season. He had some offensive struggles early. Last year, we know, didn't go his way. And it's not just about the point production. It's been how dangerous and effective he's been playing alongside Dakota Joshua. And it's nice to see him put a capper on his season getting to 20 goals tonight.
For sure, boys, and the way he scored the goal is kind of typical of that line, right? Whether it's Teddy Bluger or, in this case, Elias Lindholm, where you're aggressive on the forecheck, you make the play, Dakota Joshua follows up to support on that play, and what does Connor Garland do? Just going, driving the net, and get some luck there as it goes off DeMello and right into his path and ends up scoring the goal. But with Connor Garland, you mentioned the second half of the season. I believe at Christmas he had 3 goals, and now finishes the season at 20 goals. He's really found, A, his motor's always been there, but being more efficient in his play. It's a very direct game, which is the name of the game in the playoffs. So, you know, optimistic with that line because we know what they can do defensively. They're all guys that play hard with Lindholm. He's a responsible centerman as well. But you get some offense, and now you have a couple of games. Dakota Joshua scored in the last game using Lindholm as a decoy. On this one, Lindholm starts the playoff on the forecheck. Hey, you need that chemistry kind of heading into the postseason, and there's no more regular season games left. So they got a couple of points in a couple of games here, and Connor Garland is central to everything they do.
Well, a guy who helped create Connor Garland's goal is Elias Lindholm. He gets his own, obviously, later on as well. But that, to me, was a very encouraging performance. I know, get through this game with no injuries, and there's not a lot you're taking away from this game, but in a moment where he needed to exert himself, Lindholm did all in both zones on that Connor Garland goal.
Yeah, unfortunate for him that he doesn't get an assist on that play because they call it unassisted because DeMelo gets a touch right in front of the net. But yeah, he on that play, you know, the versatility and having him be third man high in certain situations or in that play, lead the attack, be aggressive on the forecheck. But what I also loved about that power play goal is very similar to what we saw against Carolina in his first game as a Vancouver Canuck, where, you know, credit to him to get in that spot to make that deflection. But I also want to go back to Quinn Hughes to finding that lane and setting up his teammates for the deflection. But guys, you know, with a Lindholm defensively, we know what he is. He's solid. And there's this discussion we had when he was playing hurt, and I'm sure he's not 100% healed at this point, but he's looking better than he was a couple of weeks ago. It was that defensively, you're going to get a solid effort from him. He's so smart. He knows, you know, he can win those draws, but at the same time, his reads are so good defensively. If you can get some offense out of him, if you can find some chemistry with a line, you know, this guy is going to show what he can do in a playoff series because he is a matchup problem. You've got JT playing, you know, top of the lineup. You've got Elias Pettersson there. And then if you have Lindholm, maybe not the all-star level, but even, you know, better than just giving a little bit of offense, chipping in there, making the right plays, that's a matchup problem for any opposition. So I think this is a great sign heading into the playoffs where he, you know, picks up that goal, is a key contributor on that that goal to start off the game for Connor Garland. And, of course, just getting that goal in the power play means a little bit more, too. With the power play, needing that, you're not going to get maybe that many opportunities in the power play in the playoffs. But in the first two games, guys, we know how this goes. They're probably going to overcall those games just to set the standard, so to speak, or get the players' attention. So you got to make sure that your power play is looking confident at least to start the playoffs, even though we know the chances are gonna probably go down as the referees throw away their whistles.
Yeah, and I mean, if those guys are going to be on power play too, Lindholm, Dakota Joshua, and we know Hronek, Lindholm spearheaded some extra work for the second unit ahead of practice a couple days ago, so they're very much staying on top of their details. But it was a layered screen as well, something that we talk a lot about in terms of getting the point shots through, having a couple guys layered makes it hard for the goalie to pick up, especially when you get that tip on it. So fundamentally really strong. Lindholm has 5 points in his last six games and is now on a 3-game point streak. So don't look now. Maybe, just maybe, he is waking up offensively exactly at the right time for this team. And, you know, the other big thing, of course, is Thatcher Demko got a second game to play before the postseason. Last game, he only allowed the single goal in the Canucks' easy victory over the Calgary Flames. Faced a bit more in terms of volume tonight at times, and not quite as much as the Calgary game. I don't think the Canucks are really under duress a ton 5-on-5. He had a few, you know, saves he had to make on the PK, but, you know, looking at the overall scoring chances at high dangers, Winnipeg only had two high danger scoring chances all game, 5-on-5.
Yeah.
Two, that's it. So it's not like he was under duress, but how did you think he looked in between the pipes?
Yeah, I think he looked solid. There was a couple of big stops. There was one on Monahan in the second period, a left pad save. There were a few others. A little bit more, I think, the Canucks at certain points, even though they didn't give up much in terms of high danger chances, you could see whether it was Nikita Zadorov kind of freestyling there, trying to skate through traffic. There were a couple of moments that you were saying, okay, they're maybe not playing to the same structure, but I thought Thatcher Demko, the most important thing coming out of this was, guys, he's playing, he's getting some activity, he's getting used to playing back-to-back games, which is important for him just to get that rhythm, that workload going again. And yeah, you're right. 5-on-5, the Canucks did not give much of anything up. And even on the PK, it was 4-for-4 for them there too. But for Thatcher Demko, I think whether he gives up, you know, two goals, three goals, it doesn't really matter for me. It's more about the workload here. And the things that we saw, rebound control was good. You also ended up seeing, you know, a situation where he's absorbing a lot of those pucks. He's making some saves on situations that do arise that aren't necessarily high danger chances, but, you know, some pretty decent chances, like I mentioned about that Monahan one. So I like what I saw from Thatcher Demko. To me, it's more about the workload than the actual how many goals he allows in this game.
Yeah, there was a couple of cross-crease passes. You mentioned the one Monahan. I think Ehlers on in the first period, also on the power play as well. So a couple of moments where he can flash the pad and show that he's, you know, all set and ready to go through to the two games. I think we'd all just look at that and say, certainly he's done more than enough to show that he's ready for game one on Sunday.
It was like a checklist, right? It was not necessarily, you're not grading anything, you're just saying, all right, check, he looks right.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's what you want to feel comfortable about. And hopefully he feels good about his game. And maybe we'll hear from him post-game to get his thoughts on how he felt he played here between the pipes tonight. I did want to ask you about Nikita Zadorov as well. I was kind of joking at the top. The only player who didn't get the memo that this was supposed to be a preseason game without any emotion was Nikita Zadorov, throwing the body. And I think he made some really nice, subtle plays with the puck as well. So for a game where everybody was trying to get through it and not get injured, Zadorov certainly looked like he had a point to prove.
Yeah, four hits, a couple of penalties as well, two on the same play on Gabe Vilardi. And looking back at that play as well, Gabe Vilardi just gives him a tap on the back in terms of a cross check, and Zadorov was looking for an excuse to be physical. He gives this team swagger. And go back to that last game that they played against Winnipeg, the 5-0. Remember, that was a situation where he was being the aggressor. He brings that swagger to this team. And going back a few months even prior to that, remember when Adam Lowry hit Nils Åman? It was a hit that Phil DiGiuseppe stood up for, ended up, you know, losing that fight to Lowry, and really changed the momentum that game. I think Nikita Zadorov remembers all of that. Like, this is a guy that does not, you know, give up anything when it comes to the physical side of the game. He remembers these things. His, you know, quote about Lucas Raymond is a pretty classic one that he gave to IMAC. So I think this was more of a, hey, I'm going to play my game. I'm going to freestyle a little bit offensively. It wasn't the tightest game in that regard. You could see he was taking some chances, which is something that he hasn't done of late. But physically, I think with Nikita Zadorov, he likes to send a message to say, if you're going to go down the middle, Nino Niederreiter, you got to keep your head up, because I'll line you up. I don't care if it's a 82, you know, game 82 of 82. He just plays the game hard. And to me, I think it's also the game within the game with Nikita Zadorov. He wants these guys to remember the next time they play him that, you know, he's going to play the game hard. So I think there was a little bit of added there for Nikita, the way he thinks about the game, the way he likes to intimidate, and the way he does keep receipts.
It's really just about showing, you know, a moment here and there. And you kind of go through it. Did everyone flash a little bit here, a moment, just to show that, hey, you're ready? And also, we talk about Lindholm, you talk about Garland, you talk about Joshua, and there's Friedman, who did it. Lafferty kind of had a bit of a mini explosion in a moment, and Suter, and all these guys. And Quinn Hughes, you know, the thing I was looking at is the timer for Quinn Hughes. What was the number going to be? Ends up being 22:38. He's not the high guy today. It's 22:59 for Tyler Myers, who's used to being the tall guy. Anyways, the high guy. But that, I look at that and I say, okay, they played this perfectly. Not just that they got out with health, but also not a lot of exertion for 43.
Yeah, the Quinn Hughes number is interesting because there's about, I think, 8 minutes left in this game, and he was about 20 minutes. So they really scaled back his time, I think, late in this game, just to be like, all right, we obviously want this game. We want to win any game, but we don't want it that much. We understand where you know, it's going to really matter. So a good, you know, situation for a lot of these guys. You talked about Mark Friedman. I mentioned he was the 7-minute guy last time he played. He gets 15:55, which is good for him, right? This is a guy who hasn't seen too much ice this year, with Noah Juulsen, nearly 18 minutes. And that's exactly what you want to see, where you understand the stakes of this game. They're not many. And sure, if Winnipeg and Vancouver end up meeting, you've got, you know, home ice advantage if you're Winnipeg, but this is a situation where you trust your team. You understand that going into the playoffs healthy is the most important thing. So spread out those minutes. And, you know, the guys that didn't play, you know, with Brock Besser and whatever he's dealing with, having that game to just rest is big. JT Miller, the hard miles he's got on his body, the 200 plus hits, a guy that does not take a shift off. He's such a talented player. this game's going to mean a lot. How often can you just, you know, load manage, right? That might be the rule of the day in the NBA, but ain't in the NHL. To have that and have these guys to jump in just to play a few, you know, even if it's 10, 15 minutes, is going to be a huge, huge impact for guys that played tonight. And, of course, those guys that didn't play tonight as well. And I start looking at some of those other numbers, guys, like, you start looking at, I think Quinn Hughes is the big one, but Filip Hronek, you know he's going to eat a lot of minutes. It's going to be near 25 minutes a game, if not more, closer to 28, 29, depending on if this team goes to overtime. The minutes you save right now are going to be huge, huge at the end of the first round especially. You can't guarantee anything beyond that, but if that next series goes six or seven games, you got to make sure you got enough in the tank.
Absolutely. You know, I don't know if there's anything you take away from this game, honestly. It's one of those games where I don't think anything really translates going into the playoffs. The one thing, however, and I agree with Trucker James who texts in, he says the only thing I did not like, and I'm sure Talk would agree, taking too many men penalties in this game. Now, I like Craig on Coach Clements mentions on Twitter as well. Maybe they should have called one on the Jets who had six players actively on the ice late in the third period with over 2.5 minutes to go. They missed that call. So both teams sloppy with changes.
Could have used one more whistle.
Yeah, right? Why not? but they have been taking too many men penalties too much this entire season. And I mean, lest we forget, about 45 games ago, Rick Tocchet said we've already taken enough for our quota for the entire season, and that has remained an issue throughout the regular season. And I know this game may not matter, but it's also a microcosm of something they've done. And in the playoffs, guys, you can't afford to give the opposition needless opportunities and cheap ones, and taking too many men penalties are cheap man advantages to give up.
Yeah, and those are penalties that a lot of times the refs are going to have to call. We can talk about throwing away the whistle in the playoffs where if it's a little clutch and grab here or as the playoffs go on, you know, we maybe don't see those penalty calls. But with too many men, if there's six guys on the ice, at some point mm-hmm. the refs are going to have to call it, right? And the second one was where Quinn Hughes jumped on the ice and nobody was coming back. Nobody was looking for a change. So maybe an overeager Quinn Hughes trying to make a change in that game. You could see he was frustrated when that call was made because he understood that, hey, that was on them to not make that happen. But you're absolutely right, Sat. This is, you know, some area that they have to clean up, which you can bet that Rick Tocchet, after the game with the guys, is saying, hey, you know, this game didn't mean all that much. Of course, you know, you have to play it out. You make sure that you get out of Winnipeg, you play a relatively clean game and get out. But those details can cost you games. Those details are something that they're going to have to clean up for the playoffs because, you know, this team has played so well defensively. They've played a tight game for the last number. But one thing you want to avoid is just giving teams freebies. In the playoffs, freebies will cost you. So, yeah, if there's one thing to come out of this game, you know, one you can excuse when it's the 82nd game of the season, too many men, you can say, all right, that was a fluke. Two, you can't be so kind with it. So that's the one thing you're saying, all right, you got to clean that up moving into the first game of the postseason.
Last one for me. We'll chat to you obviously on pregame on Sunday, but the thing that gives you the most confidence going into game one and just anything that maybe gives you a bit of concern going into game one.
Yeah, I think the defensive structure of this team, it's wild saying that, guys. A year ago, we mm-hmm. were not even thinking about that, but the way that they're able to lock down, and of the last eight games, they've had five games that they've given up five high-danger chances or less, right? So the ability of this team to play a disciplined game in the sense that they're not going shot for shot. They're not looking for, you know, a track meet against anybody. They're comfortable in their skin. And that's something that Rick Tocchet's mentioned about other teams like the Bostons of the world where, hey, they can play their style of hockey and they'll be okay with that. I think with the Vancouver Canucks, they've shown that they're that team. So that gives me confidence. I think the one area, and I've talked about this for a couple of weeks, is the X factor is Elias Pettersson, right? If he wins his matchups, you're in a good spot. If you're struggling in that role, whatever that matchup may be, that line, then it's a lot more even in any series, whether that's against Nashville or beyond. So I would say the X factor conversation for me is Elias Pettersson and his line. Can they win their matchups? Can they, you know, outscore the opposition 5-on-5? But, you know, this team, the way that they're even able to win low-scoring games, that'll give them a lot of confidence heading into the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll get your thoughts more about the matchup against the Nashville Predators, but you feel good about the Canucks' chances against the Preds?
I do. I'm going to make some predictions for Hockey Night Punjabi tomorrow as well, Ooh. So keep an eye on that. But I do feel good. It's not going to be easy, though. I think Nashville is a very different animal than we remember seeing in December and October. They've changed their game. They're playing with a lot more confidence. And it's not going to be easy, though. That's a team. And I know we agree on one thing. Tommy Novak is my guy as well. I love watching him play. That line in transition, the Canucks have been good in transition this season. But, you know, you stray away from some of the details in your game. That's a team that does like to play fast and then pose some problems. So I think Vancouver takes it, though. But we'll see. It's not going to be an easy one.
Yeah, it certainly won't be. But Randeep, great stuff as always, man.
We know you got a busy night. I know you want to get home in time for the Taylor Swift release.
Well, also, he's got to go record in the booth with Brendan Batchelor, which is on the Canuck Central feed as well. They're taking questions and perhaps some playoff preview talk there as well. But Randeep, great stuff as always, man. And we look forward to chatting with you pregame Sunday ahead of the Canucks and the National Predators game one of the first round.
Can't believe it, boys. Playoffs. And Bick, you just educated me on pop culture there. I had no idea about the Taylor Swift release. I had no idea, man. I've been focused on another release of recently, so I'm focused on that, all right?
Yes.
All right, boys.
Yeah, entrepreneur Randeep Janda. Great stuff as always, man.
Tortured play-by-play teams department.
That's Randeep Janda. And stay tuned in the booth coming up with Batch and Randeep as well. They're taking questions, so check out Batch's Twitter feed if you want to get some questions in for their discussion coming up a bit later as well. Well, get your thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. And, hey, it doesn't just have to be about tonight's game here. This game is over. Canucks lose, obviously, 4-2 against the Jets. A rather meaningless game in terms of what it means. The only thing...
Meaningless games in April.
Yeah, meaningless game in April. And the only thing this determined was that the Winnipeg Jets will be the top Canadian team in the NHL this season, more points than any other team. And if the Canucks were so lucky to get to the Western Conference Final, and if the Winnipeg Jets were so lucky to get to the Western Conference Final, the Jets would have home ice advantage. So that's what was at stake tonight. But given the lineups for both teams, given the overall posture of the game, it was not a consideration or a motivating factor for either team. But that's really the only thing that was at stake. And somebody was asking us, did everybody come out of this game healthy? Yes. And that's the most important thing. We talked about this on the pregame show. Like, no matter what happens tonight, the only thing that matters is getting out of this healthy. And the head coach, who never looks ahead, like Rick Tocchet will always talk day to day. You ask him about 2 days, he'll always say, hey, we're not focused on that.
And the players are really good at adopting that mentality as well.
Tocchet today said our only focus is getting to Winnipeg and out of Winnipeg healthy and getting ready for Nashville. His whole thing was, let's just get the hell out of there as soon as possible and let's start focusing in on the Nashville Predators. So that just tells you about where the mindset was for this game. So I'm not taking anything out of it in and of itself. So if you want to get your thoughts in on the season, the playoff preview, you know, any memories of the regular season campaign,
what stands out for you,
we can dive into all that sort of stuff. But there really isn't a ton of analysis of this game outside of what we really spoke to Randeep about so far, but we can dig in a bit more on a few guys.
You know, I love to steal that phrase from Mike Tomlin where he says hockey, or he's talking about football, but I'll use it for hockey. Hockey is the game the business is winning. Tonight, the business was health.
It was.
And they did that. And there's really only two moments. Mark Friedman slides down to block a shot, which, hey, credit to him. Here he is. He gets back in the lineup. You got to compete and show your spot and stays on the ice, battles through that whole shift, gets off eventually, and was back out quickly. This evening, Mark Friedman ended up with 15:55. So good night from Mark Friedman. And the other like physical moment was Zadorov stepping up for that hit on Niederreiter, and then later on Zadorov as well with the little scuffle. So those were just like the 2-3 moments that really stand out as far as was health in question. Are you creating contact? Was there a moment we kind of went winced and thought, is he going to be ready for game one? That was really about it. That was really about it. So they did the business tonight.
Yeah, I thought so as well. In terms of players, like we talked about, Garland stood out tonight. Thatcher Demko, he gave up three goals tonight. One was an empty netter. But what did you think of the way Demko looked overall?
He looked like Thatcher. Honestly, if you didn't tell me he was hurt for 5.5 weeks, I'm just like, all right, that's fine. Now, not every team would start their starting goalie. I know the Oilers might, but...
But I think... I think the Canucks had no choice because they wanted him to get one more game, and he wanted to get one more game in before the playoffs. But yeah, I mean, Stuart Skinner got lit up in the first period against the Avs tonight.
The reserve team out there on a handful of shots as well. But, you know, he looks ready.
He does look ready.
You didn't really fear, for me, like, they took their time with this. They slow played it. He looks ready. And certainly in 20 minutes the other night, you just look at him like, oh, yeah, that looks like Thatcher Demko.
Yeah.
And not only does it look like Thatcher Demko, it looks like a different standard of goaltending that we've seen here recently. It's nothing against Casey Smith, nothing against Artur Shelovs.
Well, he's a completely different caliber of goaltender.
He's different, man. He lives in a different tier than a lot of goalies in the NHL. And it just everything just looks settled all of a sudden. So that, to me, was a big check. It's like, all right, that one's done too. And the Canucks looked back to normal these last two games with how they can play in front of Thatcher Demko, and it's a credit to him and obviously the whole staff making sure he was ready and the way they played this out.
Yeah, absolutely. Christopher, stuck in traffic, says, been stuck in a hole at work all day, so stuck in traffic and stuck at work. Which was the one player from the Canucks that did not travel with the team today? So that was Brock Besser, who did not make the trip. All the other players did, and that included JT Miller, who did not dress for the game, also included Hronek and Cole, neither of whom dressed. And for those wondering, why did the Canucks not rest any more players? Well, they're capped out. There are no roster limitations outside of, you know, can you be compliant with the salary cap? The Canucks have 24 players up. That meant they could rest four players if they wanted to field a full roster for the game tonight. And that meant that the four players, as we mentioned, were those guys, and they couldn't rest anybody else. Now, Rick Tocchet was asked about that, and he said before the game, if he could, he would have rested 10 players before the game for the game tonight. But obviously, the numbers kind of got in the way in terms of what options they had. So for those wondering who played, who didn't play, and why, those are the reasons why.
650 into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Should I read a couple of jokes per 60 here?
Yes, please, get them in.
Worst game from Hughes I've seen in a while. I don't know if some of these are jokes, but I'm going to take them as jokes. And this one, I just want to get these ones out of the way here.
Okay.
A meaningless game, but Demko was a concern. And let's face it, Petey will be a complete bust in the playoffs. He looks so lost. Play him on the fourth line in power play. That's it. Let's move Lindholm up.
Poor fun. All right. Sure.
We are so back.
Vic is back, man. In ridiculous text message. All right, I get it. You know, people have their reasons to be concerned if they want to be, and we won't find out till the playoffs begin. So, sure, do your thing. Dave says, I thought Demko Lindy played well.
Patterson, why are you reading the serious ones?
I'm saying Demko, Patterson needs to step up. I like Big Z's aggression, but looking forward to the playoffs.
Oh, there you go.
I think people want to see Patterson play better. Again, like, I don't think there's anything we're going to learn in this game from Patterson. It comes down to, can he elevate in the postseason? That's ultimately what it comes down to, and that's what we talked about now for the past few weeks.
Dress rehearsal's over, right?
There's nothing else we can talk about in him showing. It's, can he elevate to the moment? And I mean, some people don't think he can. This one says they need to get Patterson going. Others have been texting in and saying he's going to be like the Sedins, won't produce in the playoffs, which I think is a bit unfair, and we haven't seen him in a real playoff, right? The one playoff he was in was the pandemic year in the bubble, and he was very good, but it wasn't a real playoff, quote unquote. So I mean, for those who think he's going to be a bust, you're going to find out soon enough. And if he's going to be better, we'll see if they text in and say they were wrong, but we'll find out soon enough. Tyler says the character arc of Garland and Joshua's bromance was one of the top stories of this season.
Oh yeah.
And it started actually, you know, pretty dicey in training camp. They went after each other during one of the first scrimmages. It looked like they were not very fond of being teammates with one another. And not only have they excelled as line mates and teammates, they have a burgeoning friendship as well, which is flourishing.
Well, hey, when someone breaks their hand for you, you better become quick friends.
Yes, absolutely. And for those wondering, is Sunday confirmed for Game 1? I wish they had a couple more days. It hasn't been officially confirmed by the league or the team, although Sportsnet did report during the TV broadcast that it will be Sunday evening.
So
at 7 p.m. That's what it looks like. Again, official word has not yet come down, but maybe it does come down before we get out of this show here tonight. There's still a couple of games going on, which are going to determine the matchups in the Western Conference so far. The Vegas Golden Knights, if they win, they finish third in the Pacific Division, which means the LA Kings would be wild card two. So they would be facing the Dallas Stars. But we'll see how that goes. Both those games are scoreless so far. And we'll keep you addressed on that situation and what the playoff matchups look like. Now, before we hit the break and get to more phone calls, 604-280-0650 or toll free 1-888-275-0650. What else are people saying on the text inbox?
650-650. This one. A lot of people texting in their memories from the season. So many amazing moments. My favorite has been when Quinn Hughes was named captain. He's been dynamite this year. Finally being recognized among the best players in the league. Remember when he was ranked 60th behind Seth Jones on ESPN's top 100 players list before the season started? That was last season, right?
That was ahead of this season. I remember people had Seth Jones ahead of him. It's true.
Was it this season?
Yeah, it was before this season. And we lied, and Wyshynski was I'm not making fun of him, but he was talking about it. He came on, he said it's a bit of a consensus. He defended how they got to it. He said he would have Hughes higher, but that's where the list was. And we all kind of scoffed at that list. And lo and behold, now he's the favorite to claim the Norris Trophy. So
we're keeping an eye on the Avs-Oilers game, just in case Makar chalks up a couple more points.
But yeah.
The Avs just scored, but it doesn't look like Makar is in on it.
I don't think Makar was on the ice when this goal happened. But Makar has an assist tonight, but so did Quinn Hughes. So he remains 2 points up on the Avs defender atop the scoring leaderboard for defensemen in the National Hockey League. This text message here says, going into the playoffs, feeling a lot better about Demko's health and Lindholm. Lindholm's play fit could be quite noticeable, and I like what I'm seeing from that line with him and Dakota Joshua and Garland. Also like the communication he had on the faceoff dot on a play with Joshua. When the sea got waved out, he changed his face-off strategy, repositioned our side, and won it like he dictated he would.
There we go.
It's a great text message, point too, about how smart he is and how he understands face-offs with positioning and changing things up with the communication and all that. He's a leader. He's seemingly growing into that leadership role a bit more. We alluded to a few days ago, he spearheaded some extra work for the second unit power play. Him and Hronek showed leadership, showed ownership that, hey, we're not going to get a ton of time to practice here before the playoffs, and we don't get a ton of time during games. Let's work on this, because every single opportunity in the playoffs matter. I think that showed some good foresight from him. And I think overall, like we talked about a little bit, his game has progressed a lot the last little while, and ever since returning from injury. If he can play like this with Garland and Joshua in the playoffs, I mean, it gives you, like, the Canucks, if Pettersson gets going and Miller does his thing and Lindholm is doing his thing, you have three lines that are very formidable.
And that's the book on him, right? He's hyper-competitive. He's absolutely a fiery guy and someone who's responsible and someone who wants to extract every bit out of his game and fight for the cause. And so the other day, like, that was great to see. And how he played today, again, I keep going back to that play. There wasn't a lot to take out of tonight. But these last couple of games, he's shown that he can be that version of it. It's not just the little things, but now the little things get heightened here. You have to be smart. You got to be direct. You got to be on top of plays. And that deflection away from Nate Schmidt, like, that to me is the play that I like.
Yeah.
It's retrieving it towards corner, getting it to Joshua is great, but it's that willingness to close the space. And you have to make things tight in the playoffs. And here's someone that's going to factor in a huge role. We were talking about in the first intermission. Yeah, they probably needed one more score. But the fact that they have this guy too, as much as he hasn't produced as much as everyone wants, what is he and how consistently is he? That to me is what player evaluation comes down to.
Yeah, and I've always felt, even through his struggles, that his value when he finds his game is going to show in the playoffs. He does this in the playoffs. That value will shine, and hopefully it does. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. You can grab a phone line, 604-280-0650. We'll get to more analysis of this game, this Canucks season. We'll look ahead to the Preds matchup. Plus, we'll hear from the Canucks head coach, Canucks players, and their general manager, Patrick Alvin. That and more coming up on the Canucks Central post-game show presented by the number 5 Orange. So the game is over, but is your night really done? Number 5 is open. More coming up next on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central post-game show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Joshua was tied up. Lindholm in to help out. Gets it free to Pettersson near side. Back to the line for Hughes. Now to Pettersson. Right circle Garland. Again to Hughes. Top of the point. Shot tip. They score. Quinn Hughes got it through on net. Joshua and Lindholm were parked in the slot. At least one of them got a touch on it, and the Canucks tie the game at two with a power play goal.
And it all starts with Quinn Hughes in the middle of the ice, but Elias Lindholm is going to get the goal in the bumper spot on the power play. Puck goes to the top where Quinn Hughes gets that wrister off. The first tip by Elias Lindholm, and Dakota Joshua is also tracking the puck. Doesn't look like it hits him. It hits Lindholm to make it 2-2, but Dakota Joshua was in that area. Two Canucks lining up perfectly for that shot from Quinn Hughes, who moves to the middle and gives his teammate some options.
Canucks lose 4-2 in Edmonton. I'm watching the Edmonton-Colorado game right now. Canucks lose 4-2 in Winnipeg against the Jets, and this is the Canucks Central postgame show presented by the number 5 Orange on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network, Satyar Shaw and Bick Nazar.
I didn't say anything. No, what are you stopping for?
No, I just kind of gave me this look. So before the show began, Bick Nazar, who is back after a long ailment,
he's
finally recovered
look
from.
Look at this guy trying to throw me under the bus all of a sudden.
But so one of the things Bick was asking was, hey, do we have clips from, like, best of clips from our show? And Eddie said, no, we don't have a ton of those, but I have a lot of sat bloopers. So add one more to the list. I did it for you, Eddie.
14 too many men penalties on the year, and who knows how many rejoiners
flubbed up. Yeah, one too many. Details, not very strong.
Get it right for Sunday, man.
Hey, I'm working towards the playoffs. That's what I'm working towards.
You and Elias Pettersson. It's like, you put up 89 points, and it's like, we can sit here and be like, you know, Sat had a good season. And people are like, I don't know, man. Is he going to show up for the playoffs?
Just wait till you find out about my contract extension. All right, keep it
before $11.06.
Well, per minute, maybe. All right, get your thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox 650-650. You can grab a phone line 604-280-0650 or toll free 1-888-275-0650. Some predictions coming in. James says, I'm going to call it now, Canucks in six over the Predators. We'll get to some more of those as the show goes on here. But what else do you see notable in the text inbox?
650-650 into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. If you got any memories of the season, predictions, whatever you want to chime in with, send it in. Regardless of the results of tonight's game, proud of the team, especially eager to watch Garland shine in the playoffs. Season has been incredibly entertaining thanks to the efforts of the Canucks management and players. That is Karin texting in into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Garland gets goal number 20. We were kind of keeping an eye on milestones today, so 20 for him. 15's on a milestone. They're all, hey, every goal is a milestone.
I'm just joking.
No, yeah. 15 for Lindholm, 75 point assists for Quinn Hughes. So that's a pretty big one as well. So Garland's a big one, though, 20 goals.
Yeah.
And, you know, really turned it up on the second half of the season. And it started before the turn of the calendar, because that Bluger Joshua Garland line started to ferment, and then it really kicked off just before the All-Star break, and carried on strong through that. And it was just unbelievable. And the work Connor Garland's done in the back half of the season, you know, shedding away the story at the beginning of the year.
And listen, I was one of the biggest critics of Connor Garland and his game. Like, you know, how many rants did I have about him and the spins that he used to do and stuff. And, you know, he himself has talked about this, that last year there was a lot of empty calorie shifts that they would have, and he would do a lot of things where it wasn't leading to anything or not enough. And I know the point production last year wasn't horrible. He had more points than this year, but more goals this season. But in terms of shift-to-shift effectiveness, I know the stats would kind of show that, okay, he's been one of the good players underlying numbers-wise, but one of the things that drove me crazy was, like, well, how much of those stats are being inflated by the zone entries, weak shots being thrown through the wall, from the wall, a bunch of low-danger shots being thrown on, and yes, they look good in terms of volume, nice zone entry to pad your stats, but it doesn't lead to any sustained offense or sustained play, and if anything, sometimes it's selfish just throwing pucks on goal when you can make a better play and involve your teammates. And this year, he's so much more connected with his teammates. He's doing all those things still, getting good zone entries, spinning along the boards, but it's to make a direct play to a teammate or create space or do something productive, or at least keep the puck going in a tough area for the opposition to be able to defend against. And those are the types of things that make you so much harder to play against. And last year, one of my criticisms of him was, how often was he a buzzsaw? How often was he getting under opponent's skin? The only one I can think of was when Sergachev punched him in the face and Bo Horvat just stood there looking at it. That's the only thing I can remember that happened last season, right? So he's got back to becoming a player who's getting under team skin. He also showed something I wasn't sure he was capable of. And the biggest thing he proved me wrong in, Bick, was he can have success playing with Miller or Pettersson. Because anytime he did before, it never worked. But when he played with JT this year, they clicked. He showed that he can be a real top six player for this team and fit in with an effective play style. And that's something I wasn't sure we would see from Connor Garland. And he proved me wrong in it this year.
Yeah, the last little bit is really key, because if there's a break glass in case of emergency scenario that develops in the playoffs and he shortened the lineup and it's like, hey, let's get our 7-8 best guys out on the ice routinely, is Connor Garland going to be one of those guys that you can put out there in a top six role? Well, that question's been answered in a big way, and he found some chemistry with multiple guys throughout the course of the season. And he's always been an intelligent player, always been a feisty player, and just those empty calories just kept showing up, as you mentioned, over the course of the last couple of seasons. But since Rick Tocchet's come in, it's been slowly trending better. And now you see the culmination of this really, really fun player that, you know, his name's getting chanted in the building. And to be honest, you know, I know he joked about it, but like, that's the way the home crowd just sound. Just chant that dude's name.
Yeah.
It's time to back your guys, right? It's clean slate now, and you're going to the playoffs, and this is a good opportunity for the fans after 9 long years to get back in that building in playoff times and back everyone. I know everyone's got takes and however you feel with the players, but what it all comes down to is it's going to be playoffs, and whatever your takes are, I have to get cast aside because this team's 1-16 that's in the second season.
Yeah.
And no. You know that I really liked that moment the other day when he got chanted. I don't know if I was working that game, but
They did it again too, Garland.
Yeah, it's really good. It's really,
he's deserved it.
Yeah.
He has deserved it. Near tears after the game too, when he did the walk off into a Kate Pettersson, and he was really moved by the ovation from the fans, and for good reason. Fantastic by the fans, but also he's earned it with his play this year for the Canucks. Got the 20 goals on the campaign. A nice little marker for Connor Garland. All right, we'll get to more of your text messages, and before we get to the head coach, let's go to the phone lines, and we'll start things off 604-280-0650 by going to Toronto, where we have Marcus on the line. Marcus, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Good evening, gentlemen. Playoff bound. Isn't it exciting?
Fantastic.
I remember my buddies from back home, originally from there, when we lost 10-0 to the Flames in preseason. And I'm like, it's a mean nothing game, but they're like, oh, it's going to be one of those seasons. And coming now that we're going into the postseason, we play a meaningless game against the Jets. Honestly, the pessimism in Vancouver sometimes gets overbearing. Elias Lindholm has looked the part since he's come back.
Yeah.
He has looked the part that we want him to be. I'm a big historian. 30 years ago, we were one goal away from winning the Stanley Cup '94. Elias Lindholm is a lot like Murray Craven. I don't think people would know. The guy, a perfect center. All of a sudden, you got JT Miller, who I think is like Trevor Linden, but can score more than Trevor Linden. Then you got Elias Pettersson as another center. You got Elias Lindholm as your third center. Going into the playoffs, you got Roenick and Hughes, which is like Lumi and Brown, but better. I honestly believe that our team is set up with Demko healthy, is set up to make a good playoff run this year. There is no way people around the league saw this coming, but people who watched this team last year in the last 20 games could have easily predicted that this team was going to be dangerous this year. I'll let you guys take it away from there. Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, Marcus, thanks for the phone call. It takes a bit of a victory lap on his belief on the team. And what a shout on Murray Craven, who is one of the guys that gets forgotten when it comes to that 93-94 team.
Yeah, the Murray Craven reference cashes what a plus 6,000.
But, I mean, he's a guy that played a lot of tough minutes for this team. He was like their third-line center, right? Played some, you know, played a lot of toughs. He was really good defensively. Did a lot of dirty work for this team.
I feel like Craven was much taller.
6'1".
Then
no, 6'1". Oh, okay. Lindholm also 6'1". The thing, you know, so remember we talked about how players are now a lot bigger now than before. Like Dana Murzyn, for instance. Like we think of Dana Murzyn, how tall he was.
My guy, yeah.
How tall do you think he was?
I read.
We
it
did to, this before.
Yeah,
right?
I think he's like a 6'3".
He's 6'2".
Yeah,
6'2". So it's like, you know, we thought Dana Murzyn of this like super tall
6'5",
player.
6'6".
Yeah. And he's like 6'2". So players back then were not as tall as now. So 6'1", 6'2" guys were, you know, seemed to be a lot bigger. But yeah, Murray Craven, 6'1", about 200 pounds. And that's, 6'1", 180. Lindholm is 6'1", 205. So... it's a good shout. It's a good shout by Marcus calling in from Toronto. I like it.
All right. I'll buy into that one.
Yeah.
I was trying to think. Me and Eddie were talking, too. I was thinking, what about Mike Pekka? But obviously, he wasn't full-time then.
No, he wasn't full-time, but he was on that team, too.
I see the two-way game part, but then I said to Bick off-air, Lindholm doesn't truck guys the way Pekka could.
Yeah.
No, I mean, Pekka was one of the bigger hitters, too. But he didn't play in the playoffs at all for the Canucks.
He was just breaking in as a pro.
Yeah, 93-94.
He was just a fun player.
Yeah, he played four games in a regular season, didn't play in the playoffs. But the next year, he had five playoff games for the Canucks and then was traded to the Buffalo Sabres for a player you may have heard of, Alexander Mogilny.
He's decent.
Yeah, not a bad player. A lot of goals. They didn't work out in Vancouver, but he scored a lot of goals in Vancouver, at least. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox. We can take more of your phone calls as well as the show goes on. But we mentioned getting the thoughts of the Canucks head coach after a 4-2 loss in Winnipeg against the Jets. And here is Rick Tocchet meeting with the media post-game.
Probably not always the easiest games to get up for a team. How'd you feel like the
play? Yeah, it wasn't bad. You know, the power play goal 2-2. I thought it was even played and then a couple of mistakes there in the third. But got to move on. You know, the big time, you know, the big prize now is playing on Sunday.
How much are you looking forward to that, Rick?
Really looking forward to it. You know, it's going to be a fun time for the guys. I want them to enjoy it. We've got some work to do the next 2-3 days to prepare. And, you know, it's going to be exciting.
For guys that haven't experienced it with fans, can anything prepare you for it?
I'm sure some guys have played somewhere where there's been, you know, some noise and stuff like, you know, these, you know, our fans have been noisy this the regular season. So you just amp it up another level. There's not going to be much time and space out there. There's more people back checking, hitting. So you got to make sure that you're ready and focused for that. We need everybody to think that way.
You were careful from the start about keeping mind on the day to day work. How long has your mind been kind of thinking to this and what's to come though?
Probably yesterday when we knew we were going to play Nashville, to be honest. Yeah.
So you waited that long?
Well, I just didn't. I don't like playing the what-if game. Don't get me wrong, like playoff mode, thinking of certain things, but actually diving into the playoffs, not till, you know, now, you know, we did a bunch of work with Nashville this morning. We'll do it tomorrow. So that was kind of our mindset.
You had a better regular season than almost anybody expected. How much more meaningful will it be if you can replicate some of that success in the playoffs?
Yeah, I think for our group, we just have to worry about, game one. You can't look at the big thing. What if, you know, we got to win a series, all that stuff. I think you get, it's dangerous when you think that way. I think we honestly prepare for that first period against Nashville. And be ready to play from that first shift. You know, that's the way I think you approach these things. I think when you think big picture, you know, I think that's when people get nervous. So I think just more of a short-term goal for us.
He expressed that it was important to him to get another game.
Who's that?
Thatcher.
Yeah.
What does he mean, and what did you think of him?
He was solid. Played well. You know, it was good to get him two games. He'll have an off day tomorrow, get a good practice on Saturday. I think he's ready to go.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet after a 4-2 loss in Winnipeg against the Jets. And
they're already prepping for Nashville.
Already prepping for Nashville.
Find a day where you can.
Well, he's been very adamant on keep it day-to-day, not focused on the day before, and even on the pregame today. It was very clear. All they care about is getting out of Dodge in preparing for Nashville. Like, get through this game healthy, just get out, just get it over with. Like, he didn't put any real importance on it. He said, yeah, of course, you want to, you know, it's another game, you can work on your game and do some proper things and everything like that. But it's very clear the focus organizationally, the head coach and the players, has been the Nashville Predators, and now everybody can put their full focus on that matchup, which begins on Sunday.
Certainly. And, you know, pleased with what Thatcher Demko has done. So they checked a couple of boxes here at the tail end of the year. Obviously, a big one with Demko and health here. So it feels like, you know, we sit here and we parse through Rick Tocchet's words.
Yeah.
He kind of laid down the marker earlier today. It's like, yeah, let's just get out of here.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? Like, he mentioned Demko, felt good about his game. And I think that's the biggest thing, mm-hmm. right? Like, the only things we were really looking at the last two games was just take care of the Pacific Division, which they did. And the other one was, can Thatcher Demko just show that he's healthy and looking good?
And there was no stiffness. It looked freedom of movement from Thatcher Demko. Yeah. You don't want to see him, like, pull up on something or not fully extend himself. The full range of motion certainly looked like it was on display. A couple of nice, you know, cross-crease saves, both on the power play, one on Monahan, one on Ehlers in the first period. Yeah. And it's those moments you look at and say, okay, you show that if you're pushed, you're going to extend yourself to the full length that you need to. And so I'm excited to see Demko on Sunday, because I know a lot of commentary has been coming out recently, like, oh, they're not that tough to play against, and we're not scared of the Canucks. And there's a certain element you kind of expect players to say that. You're not going to admit fear going into the playoffs. But I was a little surprised by some of those comments, because at some point you're going to have to play Thatcher Demko. At some point, you have to try to get a goal past Thatcher Demko.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, we can talk a bit more about the matchup against Nashville as the show goes on. We have people texting in about it and everything. But if that becomes a low-scoring series, and it could be, I still like the Canucks' chances with Thatcher Demko being the netminder. You just can't... The thing you don't want to see them do, and like I said before, the only concern I would have out of this game is a continuation of the too many men penalties. Mm-hmm. The Canucks have... it's a long season. Everyone's going to have bad moments and moments you give the puck away or make uncharacteristic mistakes, but you can't be one of the league leaders in too many men penalties, and that's where the Canucks are. You can't give cheapies away. You know, and that's where, in the postseason, there were some games in these close games. Remember against Winnipeg a couple times they lost. It was Noah Juulsen being over eager, going for a hit, creates a 2-on-1. Outside of that, the game was very close. Against the Kings, not being attentive on the bench. Mm-hmm. You don't have five skaters out there. It's a power play when you're not undermanned. A guy misses the call to jump onto the ice. You give up a goal. You can't do things like that in the playoffs against the Nashville Predators. That's inviting them into the series. So if it's going to be a low-scoring series, I like the Canucks' chances as long as they don't do stupid things. And that's one thing they've been really good this year, right? In so many different ways. They're disciplined, they're details. But those types of moments can sink you in the playoffs, and you have to avoid them.
And it's, as much as we talk about it, the game of mistakes, this team doesn't make routine common mistakes.
Yeah.
But they have made some big ones.
Some loud ones from time to
time. Yeah, and like puck clearances at times, like Hronek. And,
well, the PK has been an issue, not getting the puck out enough at times.
There's been those couple of moments, and then you tack on too many men. Like, things that you are in control of. Bluger with some stick penalties and things like that. So it's stuff like that if you clean up, man, you would just lighten the burden on yourself so much.
Yeah.
Just... do the smart things. Eat your vegetables, basically. Yeah, 100%. Is what I'm saying, right? Like, doing the things that you are in control of, that you know are good for you. Don't take the silly plays that give your opponent an edge.
Yeah, 100%. I'm there with you. A lot of reaction on the text inbox, 650-650. Brandon and Poco says, never mind the Canucks taking too many men penalties. Sounds like you guys have too many men in your booth with the mistakes you guys are making. Brandon and Poco texting, I love the jokes for 60. Always fantastic.
All right.
You know, Mike says, Marcus from Toronto gets my vote for the best comment of the postseason thus far. The Murray Cravens reference, Mike.
Huge.
And this one here says, Nathan Lafayette yet hit the crossbar, or we win the Stanley Cup in 94. Yes, we'll never
what
forget.
Heartbreaking moment is yet to reveal itself.
We'll never forget that crossbar, that not crossbar, yeah.
post
that Nathan Lafayette hit on that, the breakaway opportunity in Game 7?
Well, the pass across.
The pass across, yeah. Right. Yeah, it was Game 7.
We're getting best moments for fans.
Yeah, okay.
Throughout the course of the season. Well, I want to ask you.
Okay.
Like, things that stand out for you this season as well.
Honestly, it's the at times game dominance the Canucks played with this year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to me, the thing that I loved the most was they had games, and we saw it against Edmonton a couple of times, of course, too. We saw it against Vegas. We flashed against Winnipeg, too. They flashed against some of the top teams. They could essentially suffocate any opponent in the National Hockey League. And to me, that's like the reason I was so excited about this team and saying, hey, they have a chance in the playoffs. Even if they're not a top, say, two or three team, you pick other teams against them. When they are on top of their game, they're one of the hardest teams to play against in the National Hockey League. The Canucks became a hard team to play against after being maybe one of the easiest teams to play against in the National Hockey League. To make that type of change, to me, is what stood out the most this entire year.
They gave up 298 goals last year.
298.
And I remember like doing a show at the start of the year, doing projections and predictions and all this sort of stuff. And I thought, yeah, they'll be improved. But if you can get it to 240, like that's an unbelievable, like we're talking about 58 goals removed.
So did they finish under 230? Was it 227?
223.
223 they gave up this year?
Yeah.
223 goals. Yeah, it's really good.
That's staggering.
So
that's a 75 goal improvement. And I thought if you did 40, decreased 40, I thought that'd be a pretty good job. And would it come at the sacrifice of offense? Well, they didn't do that.
Yeah.
They managed to score just as much as last year and 223 goals against. It's unbelievable work.
Yeah, they gave up the fifth fewest goals in the NHL this year.
Yeah, and last year they had 276 goals for and 298 against.
And this year 279 for, 223 against.
So they scored more and gave up significantly less.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Well, plus 56 goal differential.
And like a moments that'll stand out for me, like even game one. It wasn't just, oh, they blew out the Oilers, right? We've seen things go wrong for teams and you just chalk up goals. They were, from minute one of the season, suffocating.
Yeah.
And on top of it. I remember walking the concourse, I think in the first or second intermission, just saying hi to some people that were in the crowd. But I could hear fans, as I was walking the concourse, say, hey, this looks different.
Yeah.
Like, it's... They're playing real defense.
They're playing real hockey. And look, like, it was real successful hockey.
Inspired day one, the adrenaline's running, all that sort of stuff. But I remember the commentary from fans as I was walking that concourse to say, hey, this looks a little bit different right now. And the fact that they carried it over throughout the course of the season to me, because you can have one inspired, fantastic performance, and that game didn't define the season, but it set the marker that, hey, this is who we are and this is what we're trying to be. And the fact that they kept recapturing that throughout the course of the season when they needed to, because they were pushed in moments, right?
Yeah.
And you had to bounce back, but they knew what they ultimately were. And chalking down 75 goals, to me, is something that absolutely stands out. And, as far as moments through the course of the season, I remember walking the concourse on game one. That was a long time ago. October 11th? A long time ago. And like that one will always stand out. Quinn Hughes moments, just stack them all together. The highlight reel of Quinn Hughes dancing on the blue line.
The stuff Quinn Hughes did. I mean, JT Miller's campaign so far this season, what he had done.
The goal against Colorado.
Yeah, I mean, off his skate. I mean, incredible. I mean, there's been so many highlight reel moments this year. And you know, for the talk about the Canucks struggling against playoff teams, and they had that month, you know, through parts of March through April, parts of April where they didn't beat a playoff team in a month. Well, what did they do after that? Well, they responded by beating the Vegas Golden Knights down the stretch, the Edmonton Oilers as well. So it's like they always bounce back. And, you know, over the course of the season, they were one of the best teams against playoff teams, one of the best teams against top 10 teams in terms of record. They took down every single team outside of the Colorado Avalanche at some point. The New York Rangers won the President's Trophy. Remember that game in New York, the 6-3 victory over the Rangers? Mm-hmm. That's the team that won the President's Trophy. They went to New York and they smacked them around. And it was really impressive to see the Canucks go toe-to-toe with the best teams in the league in the regular season and more than hold their own for this campaign. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650, and we'll get some more of those as the show goes on. And you did hear the Canucks head coach at the podium, and that was brought to you by Tiletown. From vision to reality, Tiletown has everything you need for your tiling project. See them today in Victoria, Richmond, Langley, and online at mytiletown.ca. It's Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. We are going to be back with more of your reaction. Plus, we'll hear from Patrick Alvin, from Quinn Hughes. Ian McIntyre will join us, and we'll dig deep a bit more into the playoff matchups, including Canucks versus Nashville Predators. You are listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show, presented by the number 5 Orange. If you can peel your eyes off the stage, they've got hockey, football, and more on the big screens. More next on Sportsnet 650.
This is the Canucks Central postgame show. Join the discussion on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Nikita Shcherbakov's after him on the forecheck. Demko out of the goal, stripped of the puck by Shcherbakov, who couldn't center out of the right corner, so dumps it back behind the net for Niederreiter. Now to Shcherbakov, right in front, he scores! First NHL goal for Nikita Shcherbakov in his first career game, gives the Jets a 3-2 lead under 6 minutes into the third period.
That wasn't bad, you know, the power play goal 2-2, that was even played, and then a couple of mistakes there in the third, but got to move on. Now the big time, you know, the big prize now is playing on Sunday.
Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet, after a 4-2 loss in Winnipeg against the Jets, praising the play of Thatcher Demko between the pipes. And this is the Canucks Central postgame show presented by the number 5 Orange on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. And as always, get your thoughts into our text inbox, 650-650. We'll hit some more as the show goes on. We'll hear from Patrick Alvin as well, who did talk to Dan Murphy during a TV broadcast. We'll play that back for you. Plus, we'll hear from Quinn Hughes as well. The one player we haven't really spoken about today, we talked about Zadorov, right? The physicality. You brought up Friedman sacrificing the body, went on a couple of shots. Mm-hmm. And everything, right? Lindholm, we talked about. Demko, Hughes getting 75 assists, 92 points on the campaign. Connor Garland with the season he's had. One guy that I actually thought for the first bit of the game, and then things got even more no-hitter-like outside of Zadorov, of course, Sam Lafferty. Was very aggressive, mm-hmm. created a great scoring chance as well for, I think it was Podkolzin who missed the chance.
Bit like a season.
Yeah.
Where he started really hot, faded a bit, but then here in the past 3 weeks to a month, far more noticeable.
Far more. I mean, he was healthy scratched for like a 4-game run. He's been healthy scratched 6 or so times this year, and this is a guy who has a career high in goals here so far this season. But when he plays with aggressiveness, speed, and physicality, he's a really hard player to play against. He can be a little bit nasty. We see more of that, and the goal scoring touch coming back a little bit. I mean, he had that incredible goal, the net drive goal against the LA Kings, but then he had the goal on the shot as well the other night against the Edmonton Oilers game. Edmonton scored on Stuart Skinner coming down the wing. And he's playing a lot better down the stretch, and they kind of need him to be that buzzsaw type of player in the playoffs. And if he can be that, then that's a real nice boost to that fourth line. Because if Blücher and Lafferty can keep building some chemistry here, and that's your fourth line in the playoffs, I kind of like the looks of that.
Yeah. Show what you can do, right? We were just talking about that earlier. Like, what is your best ability? How consistently can you do it? Well, the big thing for me is Sam Lafferty, speed.
Yeah.
Right? Speed. Like, this isn't a fast team overall. Your injection of speed in the bottom six when you're out there playing with high energy could be massive. And here comes Vasily Podkolzin, right? Showcasing a little bit of something here as far as the physicality. They've paired well together.
Yeah.
Now, defensively at times, it can be a struggle. I don't know, tonight. Again, tonight's not serious, but it's a dash -3 for Podkolzin. And he had a couple of tough moments handling the puck.
So on the first Winnipeg Jets goal, the Perfetti goal, I think it was. Yeah, the Perfetti goal at the beginning of the second period. Vasily Podkolzin doesn't get the puck in deep. And he gets it stripped off of him. It's a bad line change as well. And the next thing you know, it's a 2-on-1 going the other way. And the Canucks go down a goal. And he's actually been really good at doing things like that overall. It was a second goal. It was a Perfetti goal because he's been generally really good
at getting pucks in deep and making
good puck management decisions.
He handled the puck on the too many men penalty as well.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, like, this is going down a tangent that didn't really intend to. But the fact that, like, Podkolzin generally does play fairly responsible.
Yes.
Blücher, we know, when he's on top of his game, solid through the middle of the ice. Penalties has been the big issue for Blücher more than anything. But then Sam Lafferty has that injection of speed, and hey, that bottom six, as much as we talk about Lindholm, Garland, and Joshua, and how effective that trio is, that fourth line has to play an energy role. And I know you've been talking about this, the McCarron group on... Sounds like a law firm, the McCarron Group.
Kiefer Sherwood line.
As we get ready for Nashville, like, that's a mess you up, truculent line. And what is your response to that? We talk about matchups, Lindholm and versus O'Reilly and Sissons versus Pettersson and on and on and on. Well, the energy is going to be required by the depth, too. And you know that those guys are going to lower the boom in Nashville. Well, what's Vancouver's response? And I look at guys like Sam Lafferty and Vasily Podkolzin, and Podkolzin has been very, very willing to throw the body. We look at some nights at the hit counter, and we're like, really? Like 6-7 hits for Vasily Podkolzin tonight?
Gets
and
in on the forecheck.
He's done it routinely. So Lafferty's got to do that too with his speed. Like, impact the game with your feet.
And that's something he can do. He signed a 2-year contract extension. Podkolzin did $1 million per season. And, you know, he's shown some promise goal scoring wise. Rookie season had 14. No goals so far this year, of course. And we'll see if he can finally get through in the postseason. Has the potential, has to realize it, but has done well enough here to earn the trust of the Canucks head coach. And that's why he's playing ahead of guys like PDG and Oman and will more than likely be on the wing with Bluger and Lafferty come game one of the postseason on Sunday against the Nashville Predators. In terms of this year, a lot of people texting in too about what they thought about the year. And Austin and Langley says, I sent this text into the postgame show on September 28. Remember when last year it was just preseason? It feels like pressure is ramping up again. Not going to be good. I remember Sat talking about like, oh, here we go again. It is nothing short of a miracle. People were waiting for a train wreck first in the Pacific. Amazing. Absolutely amazing campaign for the Vancouver Canucks. And you know, a man who did talk about this campaign so far this year was Patrick Alvin, who did chat with Dan Murphy. And if you missed his thoughts, we want to play this back here. It's a couple minutes of Patrick Alvin talking to Dan Murphy about what he's seen from the team this season and how excited they are about things heading into the postseason. Here is Patrick Alvin with Dan Murphy.
I know, Patrick, you would have liked to have had a chance to win the Western Conference this evening. That couldn't happen when Dallas won last night. So how nice of a luxury is it to at least sit a few guys to get a little extra rest before the playoffs begin on Sunday?
Well, I think it's a fine balance there. Obviously, we wanted to have a chance to win the Western Conference. And with that being said here, a couple of guys with bumps and bruises to get a chance to rest for Sunday.
Now, this has been a great season for your team. I know you said at the beginning of the season that you had good players, but you had to learn how to play as a team, and you gave that message to the players. At what point this season did you think, okay, they've got it, they understand what I was trying to say, and they are coming together to play as a team?
Well, I think it's a process where we started last year. In the end of the season, we could see that the players starting to buy into the structure and the system Rick wanted to implement there. And they formed that partnership during the summer. The communication from the coaches and the players was good, and they were ready to go from day one in training camp. So it's a process over time, and I'm pleased to see where we are right now.
I think Rick said that one of the things he's most pleased with is the resiliency of the team. There were moments this season when things could have got off the rails a little bit, and they didn't. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, in my opinion, there were two games that stood out to me. You know, we had a good start to won the first two games, and then we're going into Philly game three. We weren't humble enough in that game. We lost 3-1. I think Rick addressed the players right away, and we got back on track. The other one was late November. It was a track meet against New Jersey at home, 6-5. We're playing well, and again, when you're not humble and you don't want to play within the structure and system, you can easily fall apart there. And I give the coaches and players credit because they handled it the right way and got back on track there.
Quinn Hughes will never say that he wants to win the scoring title amongst defensemen. He has that chance tonight. But how do you view individual awards in a team sport? Like if Quinn wins the Norris or if Rick wins the Jack Adams, how do you view those accomplishments?
I think individual awards are great, but in the end of the day, you want to have the big one. And individual success comes from team success. I think that's something we preached early on in the training camp right away. And when you're playing as a team and you're playing within the structure, a lot of players are going to have individual success.
JT Mill's been a good player ever since he was traded to Vancouver. Always been emotional, but sometimes that emotion has gotten the best of him. What has his maturity been like in your eyes in terms of taking what the coaching staff has given him and making the most out of that?
We all know what type of player JT is, and the good thing with his emotion is he can bring it onto the game. In the tough games, he can drive the play. I would say the partnership and the respect he formed with Rick Tocchet and Adam Foote. You could see the growth and the maturity in the DT's game there. And he has been a very, very good player for us this year, very consistent.
Yeah, I think some players want to be coached and want to be challenged, and he's one of those guys. Perhaps just a word on Nashville, your opponent in the first round. What do you think of that matchup?
Yeah, as I said, I think all eight teams in our conference are a really good team, and that's the reason why they're here. Nashville has been playing great hockey here since the All-Star break, very fast. They've got a good foundation of players that have been involved in playoffs in the past. You got the winner in Ryan O'Reilly there that's been leading the first line really good. So we're excited, and we're up for the challenge, definitely. And our team here, sitting at 109 points here today, they have confidence going into next week.
Well, congratulations on the season so far. I know it's not a finished journey, but great to win the division title, and best of luck into the playoffs.
Thank you very much.
That is Patrick Alvin with Dan Murphy. That was on the Sportsnet Pacific broadcast. And I turn to you when he mentioned the two games that stood out to him were the Flyers game after they beat Edmonton and started on the road and they got, you know, spanked. It was, I mean, not spanked, but it was, they had no business in that game. They got blanked by the Flyers. And the second game was the one against the Devils where they were down. They end up tying it 5-5, then cough up with a bad turnover late in the game to lose that game 6-5. And he mentioned, those were games we had to be humble. We got humbled in, like, we
moments that can sink you.
Yeah, and you know, we can't play the type of loose hockey that they played in the past, and if they don't figure that out, this is not going to be a good year. And it seemed like any time the Canucks had a moment like that, they always jump back. I mean, the only time I can think of them having the two bad games was, it was a Flyers game at home. It was the last game of a homestand. Horrible game. They lose, look the same as that first game in Philly, and then they go on the road, and they start in St. Louis against the Blues. They lose that game against the Blues in St. Louis. Don't play well in the first period. Now, they bounce back and put the pressure on, but ultimately lose that game in regulation, and then they reeled off. It was the five wins in a row, or four in a row, whatever it was, over the Devils, over the Rangers, over the Islanders, over
the
Predators.
They put the lotto line together, right?
Yeah, and they just went off, yeah. Right? They beat the Sabres as well, and then lost in overtime to the Columbus Blue Jackets to conclude that road trip. And they bounce back from two subpar performances and play some of their best hockey. And that's kind of been their trademark this season in many ways, having the resiliency to rectify their problems and meeting most challenges. And, you know, people are still texting in and saying, well, they've been average against good teams. And when it comes to their record, they have one of the best records against good teams. Now, they've had bad games against good teams, but they've beaten every single good team in the National Hockey League this year except for Colorado Avalanche. So, you know, they've shown they can win those games. So I think their resiliency and their ability to bounce back and improve on their game and play responsible hockey throughout the year has been very impressive.
The other thing, too, you mentioned individual success. And look, this is a fairly straightforward answer. Just talking about, hey, team success, you'll find your individual success when the team is having success. But there was a moment, and I missed it because I was away, and I think it's important. If you go watch when JT Miller got his 100th point,
yeah,
it just looked like every other goal. And when they got to the bench, Connor Garland kind of reacted and kind of punched him. I'm sure everyone saw that one, where it's like, hey, you got your 100th point. But go to last year and watch Elias Pettersson's 100th point in a moment where the dynamics of what the mindset of the team is different. Whereas at the end of the year, you're going for these stat padding. And I know that's something Yannick has talked a great deal. Where at the end of the year, like, guys are very aware of their staff and they're just trying to help each other out. And when you're out of the playoffs, that's kind of what you're playing for. And last year, when Elias Pettersson got his 100th point, everyone went right after Pettersson. And it was like big, big celebration. It's like, hey, man, like, congrats, you did this awesome thing. And when JT got his 100th point, it kind of went under the radar. And just this year, seeing that mindset, to me, shifted in a big deal. That, like, okay, someone got the 100th point. It doesn't really matter right now. The team is looking to do something bigger.
Yeah.
And just a moment like that, just for me, like, really resonated because you can see, like, what the goal is. Where the focus is for the players. And that's a big thing for me as you get ready for game one.
Well, you know, this person texted in and says, player success, Miller 100 points, Besser 40 goals, Hoaglander 20 goals, Hughes plus 38, moves from 7th to 2nd all-time in points by D-men for the Vancouver Canucks in their organization's history, Demko 918 save percentage, potential awards, Norris, Jack Adams, Jim Gregory, Vezina, Lady Bing, Hart, Hughes, captain, 8-1 win to start the season, playing with structure, team additions, held to six All-Stars, playoffs again, first in the Pacific. That's a text message unsigned about this season. And all those, that individual success happens because the team success is happening. And, you know, I've mentioned this before, but if you haven't heard it, I'll repeat myself again. Something amazing happens when everybody buys in to helping each other out. If you buy in to back your teammate, if you do something to sacrifice for yourself, which helps your teammate out, if everyone sacrifices for one another, guess what happens? You all eat at the end of the day. Maybe one day you're not getting it because you're the one sacrificing for your teammates. Well, other games where that sacrifice comes back and helps you out. And there's no coincidence that with the sacrifices they've made for the team game, so many players are having tremendous individual success. Because the better the team is, the more opportunities you have to have success and you can cash in on, and give them credit, they've cashed in on it. So I don't think it's just a fluke that buying in and being selfless can mean a lot of good things for you selfishly if you're ready to do that. And I think that really encompasses it in terms of their season success with how many individual players have also had tremendous campaigns.
How many times do we talk about and highlight in post-game shows, hey, this guy on this goal got off the ice.
Yeah. Beelines it over so the second line can jump in and make a play.
The next wave can come on, whether it's the whole line or just one guy. And that one player who just came on was able to pop in a goal, get there for a rebound against a tired lineup out there for the opponents. But you were willing to sacrifice an opportunity for yourself to let a teammate onto the ice. That happened countless times over the course of this year, right? A play before the play, someone holding onto the puck, down low into the zone, waiting for players to come on. Like there was just countless moments that, to me, the growth of this team that needed to happen. And Patrick Alvin mentioned it, we have good players, but you have to become a team. Like that was a pretty stark comment to make before the season.
Yeah.
And they adhere to it. And you put yourself in this position where you get 50 wins, you win a division, and now you go into the playoffs feeling pretty confident.
Yeah, as you should with how things have gone so far this season. In terms of standout moments, this text message says, standout moment was Tyler Myers' shorthanded goal against the Rangers. Probably the game where I changed my mind on the big fella. This one here says, the best moment, the East Coast road trip. Kicked all sorts of ass. We can face anyone in the Stanley Cup final. Just getting there might be tough. Yeah, well, maybe the biggest challenge is getting there oftentimes, no matter how good you are.
I'm so pumped up for everyone to watch playoffs and just relearn what it takes.
Just how different it is. Yeah, like the game is so different.
How tough it is.
Yes.
And maybe you were distracted 4 years ago, a lot going on during the pandemic, and it wasn't the highest quality of playoff hockey. It was better than regular season, but it wasn't true playoffs. It's been 9 years.
Yeah.
And relearning the dedication and the effort and the sacrifice, what it looks like, it's going to be a totally different environment come Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely will be. Mark from In the Sea to Sky says, that OT goal, the game-winning goal by Hughes from Miller against the Islanders on home ice.
Oh, right, yeah, the quick little pass-through and Quinn ripping it.
They beat Horvat and the Islanders, and I know a lot of fans took a lot of glee out of that one. What else are you seeing on the text inbox here, Bick?
Jason and Aldergrove, no question, Jack Adams will be in Rick Tocchet's possession. I really love to give credit to the rest of the coaching staff with Gonchar, Foot, Mike Yeo, if you want to throw his name in there as well. Guys who know what it takes to win cups. No doubt their influence really show with how well the Canucks have played defensively. I don't see them getting outcoached in the playoffs. What do you guys think? So it'll be really interesting to watch because this is somewhat new for Rick Tocchet as well.
Yeah, I mean, the playoff appearance he had with the Arizona Coyotes was
formerly
the bubble.
The Arizona Utah Coyotes, Hockey Club.
I won't say it. But the bubble playoffs, which Rick Tocchet has dismissed himself recently, asked about it. Mm-hmm. That's the only real playoff experience he has as a head coach. Now, he's been part of Stanley Cup winning teams with Pittsburgh Penguins as an assistant, so he's been around it. I don't know if we have enough track record to say confidently they're not going to get outcoached, because I do think situationally in the playoffs, things matter so much, right? And Tocchet himself did mention a few days ago that in the playoffs, he says regular season, it's really like, hey, 10% influence in terms of matchups. You can't overdo it. It's a long year or whatever. That increases to 20-some percent. You have to make sure that you're giving yourself every chance and taking advantage of every opportunity. He hasn't really chased the extra 1% too much over the course of the regular season. Is he going to do that in the playoffs? If he does, I don't think they'll get outcoached. But if he sits back a bit more and kind of lets it happen, you got to be careful in the playoffs where there's a real balance between being aggressive as a head coach and adjusting and, you know, not being the mad scientist and doing too much. But if you sit idly by too long in the playoffs, you're going to get crushed. And we've seen that in the past in Vancouver. Like, for instance, I mean, the last time the Canucks made
nine years ago,
Willie Desjardins made almost no adjustments. It got to the point where organizationally they sat down and tried to do it, but it was too late to really salvage anything. They came back to win game five. They had a 3-0 lead in game six, but blew that, ended up losing in six games against the Flames. But that was undone a lot of their work by not making enough adjustments. They found themselves at games where the Sedins didn't play enough. And it's like, you can't be having games like this. Now, we know with Tocchet, they're not sitting there and not playing Hughes and Pedersen and Miller enough time. Like, those guys get ice time. But he's going to have to make a bit of an adjustment in terms of his aggressiveness and the matchups and how he responds to in-game moments.
That's the stuff that's going to be a lot of fun to watch. Because there's someone else that's under the microscope is Rick Tocchet here. Right now, it's everything that he's preached has come to fruition.
Absolutely.
And now, when you get to this stage, how you do it. And I think he's got all the capabilities and all the qualities to do exactly what Jason was talking about. Be the guy who won't get outcoached. But we haven't really seen that. And it's a projection to make, but suddenly projection becomes reality on Sunday.
Yeah. Absolutely. Jeffro texts in, first two rounds, we will have the best defenseman and the best goalie in the series. And the third round, a cup final, too, if we get that far. Jeffro texting in, very confident in Demko and Quinn Hughes with the way they've played so far this season.
Through the entire Pacific, pending how it turns out here, Anaheim's up two goals on Vegas. So it looks like Vegas might be sliding to the Central.
Well, it depends on what the LA Kings end up doing, who are tied with the Chicago Blackhawks.
Yeah, they're tied.
Currently.
But apparently the Blackhawks only have like five shots on goal.
So it's not. But hey, but they still have to win the game, the LA Kings do. And the LA Kings do have the tiebreaker. So as long as they get a point, then they would finish third in the division, which means the Vegas Golden Knights would be playing the Dallas Stars in round one.
Yeah, so the Kings just need to get to OT.
Yeah.
So
we'll see what happens. We'll keep an eye on the out-of-town scoreboard and what the playoff matchups ultimately will look like. We'll hear from Quinn Hughes as well on the other side, plus Ian McIntyre, and more of your thoughts as the Canucks Central postgame show rolls on. It's Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar, and it is presented by the number 5 Orange, a Vancouver legend, but they got sports too. More next on Home of Your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Puck came free to Suter. Flips it high in the air to the point. Schmidt holds in. Right wing for Lambert. Left side. Sin in front. What a save by Demko as he robbed Monahan down low with the left pad after the nice pass by Vilardi out of the left corner.
Canucks lose 4-2 in Winnipeg against the Jets, and this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by the number 5 Orange on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650, and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. Keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. Quinn Hughes, what a magnificent campaign for him. Picked up an assist on the power play on the Elias Lindholm goal tonight, and he is vying for the Norris Trophy, of course, but also trying to maintain his spot atop the National Hockey League scoring for NHL defensemen. 92 points on the campaign, two ahead of Cale Makar, who has a point tonight and is up to 90 points on the campaign. And if this game ends without Cale Makar getting two more points and only 3.5 minutes left in this game, which is going to end in regulation, Quinn Hughes will finish the campaign as a top scorer amongst D-men in the NHL. And he met with the media post-game after a 4-2 loss against the Jets to conclude the regular season. And here is Quinn Hughes with Kate Pettis. Patterson.
Yeah, I mean, obviously missing some big players, but thought we were, you know, decent, and I think everyone's looking forward to the playoffs.
I'm looking forward to what comes next.
Yeah, I think we all are. You know, I'm not going to say this is, you know, it's obviously not the easiest game to get up for. You're looking forward to playoffs. You don't want to get injured. You want to take care of yourself, but thought for the most part we came out unscathed, and everyone deserves the next week and a half, 2 weeks, whatever. We're going to, you know, play with Nashville, and then, yeah.
How ready do you think the team will be for Sunday?
We're going to be as ready as we, you know, possibly can be.
Obviously important games for Thatcher the last couple of games. How do you think he played heading into the
playoffs? Thatcher's the last guy I'm worried about. He made some massive saves tonight, and he's going to make some big saves throughout the series.
when you think about the Predators as an opponent? Yeah,
obviously one of the better teams in the last 3 months, 4 months, and we'll look at the tape, and I think tomorrow's an off day, but we'll look at it right after that.
That is Canucks captain Quinn Hughes after the game. Very happy with Thatcher Demko's play, a lot of confidence with him. And a lot of these players are now looking ahead to the Nashville Predators. That's really what it comes down to. Now, we went through the game and the things that stood out to us and everything that happened. If you missed early part of the show, I want to hear what we talked about. You can check out the podcast, of course, and go through, the first little bit of it. And we really dissected everything we could out of the game. But the focus, and we see it on the text inbox, is obviously what a great campaign this has been.
Mm-hmm.
But the excitement and intrigue heading into the playoffs, game one coming up on Sunday at 7 p.m. with the Canucks hosting the Nashville Predators. And, to a man, you're going to hear the Canucks say all the right things. Talkett said a lot of good things about the Preds too, and heard Alvin talk about how well they played down the stretch, how fast they are, how aggressive they are. That's one advantage they have. They have pace on their team. They do take some chances, which can be positive in terms of you being able to take advantage of that going the other way. But it's you can't be sloppy. Like, to me, the big thing is going to be, can you hone in on all the praise we just gave them on their puck management this season, playing through details, the structure they've had. They have to own that in the playoffs. Like, that has to be who you are to a higher degree in the playoffs. And if you do that, I think they take care of business against the Predators. But the last thing you can do against a team like that is give them cheap opportunities, not take them as seriously. I don't anticipate that they will.
Yeah.
But that, to me, is the potential downfall in this series. And we'll talk more about this tomorrow on our shows. And as mentioned this earlier, like, I think the Canucks are going to win against the Preds. Like, that's, I'll say how many games tomorrow, perhaps, but I feel like the Canucks are going to win this series. The only thing is, you have to be humble, like Patrick Alvin mentioned. You can't let, now that you got into the playoffs, be like, hey, we're going to take care of business, we're not too worried about this. Like, you have to be on top of your game to the nth degree.
Yeah, like, I agree with a lot of what you just said there, but I don't think that's just singular to Nashville. It's
fair.
It's the playoffs.
No, it's fair.
You can't live in a reality where it's like, hey, 3 games we can make mistakes, but the other 4 we'll get it right. No, you got to be sharp, man. Everything at this stage of the year has to be fine-tuned, and mistakes are going to happen, and we'll talk about them when they happen, obviously, but you can't be in a reality where sloppy things exist in your game, because then it's going to be short order, whether it's 1 round or 2 rounds, whatever it is. You will get exposed if critical mistakes exist in your game. So that part is always going to require getting cleaned up for Vancouver. But as far as what it can mean moving forward, as you mentioned, and texters have texted in, well, they're going to have the best D-man in the first two series. They're going to have the best goalie in the first two series. And it does feel like it's emerging as LA will get to the spot and be playing Edmonton, because they're up 3-1 now on Chicago, and Vegas is down 3-1 with 11 minutes to go. So unless Vegas has a furious comeback against Anaheim, it's emerging that it could be the Kings. But that could change in the next half hour. But nevertheless, you're going to have some advantages here. And if you are clean and you play to your ability, I think the way we look at it is, we talked about failures and successes to the first round and all that. If you end up losing, make sure it's Nashville that beats you, not you beating you. And that, to me, would be the thing.
And Nashville beats you would be you getting goalied. Like, if
yeah,
and to me, if Nashville beating you as they dominate you, that's you beating yourself. Like, I don't think 100%. The Canucks would be the second best team. If you're the best team and the goalie stands on his head and you're like,
or if it's just like a really well played series, you're both at 9 out of 10 and it just goes wrong, right? Bounces, whatever it is. But at the end of a series, I want to be able to say, like, the Canucks put their best foot forward. And if we're talking about mistakes and all these things, that would be just really, really dispiriting. Because you can't live like that in the playoffs. It will get exposed.
It absolutely will. And that's what is going to, really put a damper on your season if you show up in the first round of the playoffs, not ready for the moment, can't, elevate your game and get lost in the entire emotion of it all. And, hey, we don't know how this team is going to react in that type of environment, because we haven't seen them in that type of environment. We can believe certain things and have some faith that they will do well, but we are going to find out very, very soon. A lot of reaction on text inbox 650. You can also go to our phone line, 604-280-0650. You know what? Let's take a phone call. We have Al and Nelson on the line. Al, thanks for calling in. And what are your thoughts after this 4-2 Canucks loss?
Hey, fellas, I just caught the third period, so I didn't see much of the game. But, you know, I'm just kind of feeling like a lot of the banter, especially I listen to 650 a lot, most of your shows, you know, Halford and Bruff in the morning. I listen to you guys in the afternoon and all your post-game shows. But, you know, I know everybody's got a job to do and have an opinion or a bit of a baseline prediction and stuff. But I got to say, like, just even mentioning whatsoever that we expect to beat the Predators in the first round, it's like, I just find that so ill-advised to even enter into that type of, you know, ballpark discussion. Like, we need to get a couple of games into this series to get a feel for what this matchup looks like, you know, and gauging the success or the failure of the season based on how we do in the playoffs is like, you know, the playoffs only start taking shape after the first round. First round tells the tale. You know, that's when, you know, a lot of odd matchups, a lot of the big contenders are wiped out in the first round. A lot of upsets happen in the first round. Really, the playoffs start settling in after the first round. So I'm just taking this game by game, guys. This team looks fantastic this year, really more ready than ever. Super rounded, you know, physical, mentally tough. A lot of boxes being ticked. But in my opinion, we need to, just as a fan base, you know, get into this playoff for a couple of games and see how this matchup starts to look in real life before making any kind of a prediction or a feel for the results. And I'll send it back to you. Thanks for the call, Butch.
Hey, thanks for the phone call, Al. I mean, listen, you can do that, sure. Like, hey, you can take any approach you want to the postseason. Wait and see. We
make a prediction at the start of round two about who's going to win round one.
Okay. After round two, we won't know. I mean, yeah. Listen, the job
I don't know what you like. We don't work for the team. We're not lacing up the skates. We got a different job to do.
Now, he did say, I understand everybody has a job to do and everything like that, right? He said he just thinks it's ill-advised. Yeah, we're not fans. Like, I want this team to do well. I grew up a Canucks fan. I grew up a Canucks fan, right? I still deep inside cheer for the team. I want this team to have success. I want this team to win. I have to approach this job though as tell you in the ins and outs of the team what they do well, what they don't do well, how they stack up in series, with whether they can win, if they can't win. If our shows were going to be, we'll see what happens, then it'd be a 5-minute recap. It's like good game, bad game. We'll see what happens next game.
If you're worried of us providing bulletin board for Nashville, it's like, well, then we're really up the heads in the Nashville Predators.
Yeah,
I'd love to have that level of power.
But I get the gist of what he's saying. As fans, you want to tell yourself not to get ahead of yourself. Sure, I mean, you can take any approach you want. I'm not going to gatekeep anybody. Be like, hey, whatever. But yeah, I mean, the reality is we're going to give opinions, and we have to also
speculate on the future.
That's kind of our job. Like, if our job was just to read facts and stats,
is that not what friends do at bars? Would be like, hey, what do you think is going to happen in the game?
This is a great point Bruff always makes too. Like, when the Pettersson thing happened, he's like, everyone's so mad. Why are you guys talking about Pettersson? Like, why you keep, you know, bringing Pettersson up? It's like, that's literally what everybody's talking about. You hang out with your buddies. They're like, is Pettersson going to sign or what? Is he not going to sign? What's going on?
You're having a conversation with some opinions here, man.
I run into people, or people come up and say hi to me. Before Pettersson was signed, every single person was asking what's going on with Pettersson. Is he going to sign? Does he want out?
Yeah.
Why does Pettersson hate Vancouver? People would ask him, why does he hate Vancouver? I'm like, he doesn't hate Vancouver. And they're like, oh, he doesn't want to stay here. And everyone in person wants the answers to those questions. And we're going to talk about those things because that's what fans want to hear about. Except for Al. Al wants us to stay on the fence a bit more. But I appreciate the kind words. I understand what he's trying to say. I get the point overall. I get it. Trucker James says, I'm going to call it now. Canucks in six. So he's not going in Al's direction. He's calling. He's predicting the outcome of this series.
650. Yeah, boys. Figure it out. How could you think we could win?
Yeah, how dare you say the Canucks can win in the second round? Marty DeRed says, congratulations on a great season, boys. Any word on who the Canucks fans will get as a TV commentator crew for this series? We'll find out very, very soon who the TV crew is going to be for the Canucks and Nashville Predators in round one. Game one gets going on Sunday.
Hey, is Ian on the line already? Oh, yes. I was going to say, does he become a double threat now? Is he going to be on TV?
No, he'll still be on TV.
Oh, okay.
Because that man can still work on the sidelines and bring you some great coverage. And that's why we call him the triple threat. You watch him on TV, even in the playoffs. You read him on digital. And you're about to hear him on radio. He is Ian McIntyre.
Dual threat is a phrase, not double threat. I don't know what I was thinking.
I really think that Sportsnet should play this music when I'm on TV.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
Here's IMAX.
There might be a rights issue or something. I don't know.
Maybe a small one.
You know, like the Hockey Night game intros? If they make it far, this should be one of the songs.
I agree. I think I'm going to be a now I don't know the word for it, a 2.5 threat.
Okay.
Because I won't actually be on any of the game broadcasts, as far as I know. But I will be doing, chats with Merv before games,
there
after games.
Okay.
So,
which will be on TV. It will be on TV.
You will not be able to get rid of me as easily as you hoped. And I think there's probably going to be some happy people in Vancouver when the broadcast crew is announced.
Yes, I agree. I agree. It's a nice tease. I didn't want to say too much because I've been sworn to secrecy, but I like the tease that you have. That's why I said, you'll get some news soon. You know what, Ian, you're in Winnipeg. Do you have anything to take away from that game tonight?
Yes. Even in late April, bring a coat.
Wow.
Because I did not, because I checked the forecast ahead of time.
Yeah.
And it was supposed to be between 2 and 10 degrees and cloudy and dry. And I didn't have far to go, from hotels. So I thought, I don't need a coat. I wake up this morning and the snow is falling.
Oh, my goodness.
And blowing. So anyway, so that was one thing. Bring a coat to Winnipeg, no matter what time of year you come. The other thing is that it's really hard to play a game when the main focus is not to get anybody hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And I think tonight, there were enough new players in the lineup, a great story for Winnipeg, having one of their call-ups score in his first game. And, there's some energy in the Canucks lineup because guys got to play who haven't played a whole lot recently. But overall, with so many of the top players sitting out and then other guys, playing, as Danny Galvin would have said, gingerly, it was clear, the main goal was to not get anybody hurt. I do think that it was still important preparation for Demko, to get a few more reps in. I'm glad that Quinn was able to play his 82nd game and collect his 92nd point. I'm glad that Connor Garland, scored another goal. And, I'm glad that nobody got hurt. It was a bit of a strange feeling, though, watching the game. And I think everybody could feel the same thing.
Yeah. The one thing that I do take out of it is Lindholm. We touched on this a little bit. He showed some energy, helped create the first goal, and then obviously scores the second one as well. His ability since coming back it feels like it's constantly ramped up, and now you're getting ready for Sunday.
Yeah, I think he's probably, and I don't know Elias well enough to say this definitively, but from talking to him a little bit and watching him play, I think he's finally gotten out of his own way mentally. I think there were a lot of things on his mind with the trade, his contract, then getting injured, not making the impression that he wanted to with his new team. In his personal life, the transition, because he's got, a partner and a 1-year-old, and they were apart for a while. I think there was a lot going on there. And I think since he came back from the wrist injury, and Rick Tocchet has made it clear how he wants to deploy Lindholm as a third line center. I mean, Elias, even told me in Los Angeles before his first game back that all he cares about now is trying to win a Stanley Cup.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't say his regular season was down the toilet, but he knows that the regular season did not go anywhere near the way he wanted it to. And now his sole focus is just on winning. And that's, I think, because he's driven that way. But I also think he knows, okay, he didn't provide maybe the offense, or he didn't do this or didn't do that the Canucks wanted when they paid a small fortune to get him. So what he can do now is help this team win, because he knows how much that would matter. And I think I think that simplicity and that focus is partly why his play has looked so good since he has come back. I mean, this is what he's made for. And really, if you take a step back and you can sort of try to just compartmentalize everything that happened from that trade on January 31st until he returned from injury, I mean, the Canucks didn't get him to get a pile of points or to be an offensive leader or any of that. I mean, they'd happily have taken that, but they got him because they thought he filled a critical need for center ice depth, for a right-handed guy who can win faceoffs, a guy who will help the penalty kill, a guy with a lot of experience, and more than anything, a guy who will help them win. And so everything that's happened to now doesn't matter to that end. It's all about how many games can they win now. And if they win at least four, you know, I think, you know, it's been a success if he helps them get through a round, and maybe they'll win a lot more than four. Who knows?
Exactly. Right. I mean, it's one of those things where it's an open playoff picture this season. Not to say that, you know, it's going to be easy, but there's a chance. Like, even if you don't think the Canucks are top three or four in terms of a contender, there's still a team that's not too far off that has the opportunity to go beyond just winning a round, and hopefully they can get past the Predators. And you mentioned Lindholm too, and it's amazing that once you kind of put your focus away on and just focus on trying to win and focus on the simple things, how your game also gets a lot better, because he's on a 5-game point streak going back to 2 games before he got injured, and points in 3 straight games to close the season. So it's really interesting how that all came together. And as far as now heading into the playoffs to take on this Nashville Predators team, how do you feel about the Canucks and their form? I mean, the Preds are as hot as the Preds were, 4-5-1 their last 10 games heading into the playoffs. We know the Canucks through the month of March at times and April had some ups and downs, finished pretty strong here. How do you think of the Canucks form heading into the playoffs?
Yeah, well, first of all, on the Predators, they may have been 4-5-1 at the end, but I believe they were something like 25-3, mm-hmm. you know, over the last 2 months. So they have been formidable. But I have to say I like the Canucks, and I want to explain that. You know, I grew up here, okay, not in Winnipeg, in Vancouver, luckily. And I grew up watching the team as a kid and a teenager, and I've covered them, watched them really closely pretty much most of my adult life. I started covering the National Hockey League at 24. And so I, like a lot of people from the West Coast, am imbued with a sense of doom at times that, you know, we can't have nice things. And no matter how promising things are, you know, there's a chance, a likelihood, in fact, that they will unravel. I mean, the Canucks are now the only franchise in the NHL that's 0-3 in Stanley Cup Finals, and they've lost Game 7s twice, and one of those on home ice. So you can, I completely can empathize and connect with all the people who feel like, you know, the Canucks, no matter what, they're, you know, whether, I don't want to use the word curse, but it's just really hard for them, even when things are in their favor, to win. But having said all that, I do feel like this team is different in a couple of fundamental ways. And one of them is that their floor seems to be as high as almost any team in the NHL. It's not their ceiling, but their floor. Like when you think about the last couple of months and all the, you know, all of our conversation about what's wrong with the team and Pettersson and the Demko injury and everything else, they still played really competent hockey, and especially defensively. And, you know, as an example, they took advantage of the Oilers when the Oilers were flat on their back at the start of the season. The Canucks piled on, beat them in 3 games. And then Edmonton has been, since then, about the best team in the NHL. Probably, although it's a very even field, probably the pick right now, to still come out of the Western Conference. And the Canucks were not in their best form when they went to Edmonton last Saturday. And yeah, I know Connor McDavid wasn't playing, but Leon Draisaitl, who's in the top five in the world, certainly was, as was the rest of their team, as was their starting goalie. And the Canucks went in there and played one of their most impressive games of the year when it mattered, to basically secure the Pacific Division, to put Edmonton in the rear view for good. I think this team has a lot more resilience and grit than it has in the past. And maybe even than when it had in a couple of those great years with the Sedins, because it hasn't been easy. They haven't just simply overpowered teams with their talent this year. And especially when the offense dried up, they had to rely on their defending and their systems play, not as a bonus to the offense, but as an absolute necessity to win. And they've retained that. So I think, you know, over seven games, they could very easily lose four of them. But I don't think they're going to play badly for any more than maybe a game or two. And you don't want to play badly in any in the playoffs. But I think they're bound to play some really good games as well. And what they have shown in the last couple of months is, even if they're not at their best, they give up very little and they still have a chance to win. And now they've got Demko back as well. I think that there's a lot of resilience. I think there's some backbone to this team. Now they've got lots of, you know, other things to look at, the inexperience in the playoffs, the ongoing sort of offensive crisis is too strong a word, but they just have struggled so much to score. And the power play has been erratic. And there is still a question about Demko having missed so much time and playing only two games coming in. There's lots of things there that we're going to find out in this playoff series. Are they real issues, or were they things we were just worrying about needlessly? But I do think that the platform for this team, the foundation, the way they play with Rick Tocchet, is as strong as perhaps it's ever been for the organization. And that should get them through some difficult games in the playoffs.
We've been doing some reflecting.
Is the show over? Have been my longest soliloquy.
It was fantastic. I've missed hearing you on post games for the past couple of games.
I've missed you too, Bick. How are you feeling?
I'm much better, much better.
You sound great.
Thank you. We were doing some reflecting, and one of the things we're talking about, and paired with what you were just talking about the high floor, is the revamped defensive improvement and the fact that they shed 78 goals from last year. They gave up 298, winds up being 223 this year, and that to me is just like astounding to go from that strain. 75 goals. It's crazy to think. Like I came into the season thinking if you can do 40 less, that'd be remarkable, and would it come at the expense of your own offense? And to what you're talking about is why their floor is defined and high amongst the NHL. Is to me because of the defensive environment that they've created, and that's just something when I reflect back upon the season, and if you have a reflection of these 82 of it, like that's the thing that stands out to me.
Well, just I would say the revolutionary change on their systems play has turned them into a stout team defensively. They've gone from being a bottom five team defensively to a top five team defensively. And we've known for a long time that they had enough talented players to score goals to win if you could play solid defensively. And they're much more than just solid defensively now. And you know, if Demko gets on a heater, then they're really hard to beat. But that's what, you know, part of what I was referring to, Bick, in the foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're not built on marshy ground, right? They seem to be built on bedrock. Now they still have to go out and do it. There's still the experience factor and some of these other issues, or the inexperience factor and some of these other issues. And they're going to have to, you know, really work on their mental strength, because I think it's hard. It's hard for Canadian teams to win a Stanley Cup. We know that. And you people can debate why. And, you know, the reality is all you have to do is look at who has won the Stanley Cup. Look at the number of good Canadian teams there's been in the last 30 years. Look at how many times a Canadian team has been to a Stanley Cup final and not won. We know that it's hard. Part of the reason it's so hard is because of the pressure, the magnitude. The players understand how big this is to us. They understand how big it is to fans and to, you know, the country and our culture and how we identify ourselves as Canadians. Mm-hmm. And that can be overwhelming at times. You know, Tockett said tonight that, you know, the focus has just got to be on getting ready for the first shift. And I know every coach will say that. But I think there's a lot of merit in what he's saying, especially the part where he said, when you think of the big things, that's when you get nervous. And so, in addition to all this physical application, how they play, the systems, there's also a huge mental component in this as well. And to this point, the Canucks have shown themselves to be really mentally strong. That's partly why they haven't had, you know, prolonged dark periods. They've had, you know, spells where they scuffled and sometimes extended spells. But as we were just saying, they still found ways to compete and win games during those times. But now it's going to be at a whole other level for the playoffs. I almost wonder, as much of an achievement as it was for them this year, this regular season, this 109 points, 50 wins, winning the Pacific Division, that included the Oilers and Vegas Golden Knights. As impressive as that is, I wonder, would it be easier if they were in the Nashville Predators spot? If they were the team that, you know, was a wild card team and starting on the road and was considered an underdog to the extent that anybody's an underdog in these playoffs because the teams are all so even. I wonder if that would be better mentally. But, you know, they earned everything they got this year. And part of that is starting the playoffs at home. So we'll see how they handle that moment, which is going to be bigger than so many of them have experienced in the NHL to this point in their career.
Well said, Ian. And I can't wait to chat with you after the first game of the postseason. Ooh. Sunday, when the Canucks host the Nashville Predators, looks to be a 7 o'clock puck drop. And Ian, thanks for all your contributions over the regular season. We will ask more of you through the playoffs, but it's going to be a lot more fun and we're going to enjoy every minute of it.
And later into the evening.
Yes.
Yes. And I hope so, because if it goes to overtime, goodness knows when I'll be able to join.
Oh boy.
You, I would love to be on. It's been, this is such an adventure. This is why sports is the original and by far the best reality television. It's the best drama going, and it so rarely disappoints us as far as the drama goes. But this season, it's just a different plot entirely for the Canucks. And I think a lot of people have had fun watching it. I hope they've had fun listening to us on radio and reading my stories on Sportsnet. And I hope we're all going to have a lot more fun this spring with hockey.
Yeah, we certainly are. Ian, thanks as always. I look forward to reading your latest on Sportsnet.ca and seeing you on Sunday.
All right. Good night, fellas.
Good night. And get home safely from Winnipeg. That is Ian McIntyre. Now, before we wrap things up, and Ian McIntyre, this insider is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. Now, before we get out, the playoff picture has not yet been settled. And you know
what? It changed a lot in the two Ian McIntyre answers.
Honestly, it did. It really did. Because the Chicago Blackhawks were down 3-1 against the LA Kings to begin the third period.
In a game which they had taken seven shots going into the third period.
LA Kings were up 3-1. And at the moment, that, you know, that period started just as the Vegas Golden Knights concluded their game against the Anaheim Ducks, a 4-1 loss against the Anaheim Ducks. So right now, the Vegas Golden Knights are done their season. And they're sitting there with 98 points, third place in the Pacific Division. The LA Kings have 97 points, and they had a 3-1 lead on the Blackhawks. The Blackhawks have scored two goals to make it 3-3.
Point percentage right now, the Kings are in.
By point percentage. So the LA Kings would have the tiebreaker. They would have to get, they would have to, if they get to overtime, 1 point, they would finish as a three seed. So we were hopeful to kind of give you a wrap up here, you know, just as the show's coming to an end that, hey, now we know the complete playoff picture. Because we do know in the Eastern Conference, it's going to be the Bruins versus the Leafs, Panthers versus the Bolts, Rangers versus Capitals, Hurricanes versus Islanders. In the Western Conference, we do know the Stars. We don't know who the Stars are playing yet. We don't know who the Oilers are playing. We know the Jets are playing the Avs and the Canucks are playing the Kings. The Oilers would be playing, the Canucks are playing the Preds, Oilers would be playing the Kings if they hold on to get a point. And if that were to happen, the Dallas Stars would be playing the Vegas Golden Knights in round one. So your award for winning the Western Conference would potentially be to play the Vegas Golden Knights if this score line holds or goes even more in LA's favor.
Yes. We were talking about this a bit earlier, just you and I off air. I know there's the thought Vegas and Edmonton go against each other and one of them gets knocked out, so you don't have to go through both of them. But if Vegas being the wild card that has to go through the Central, I think it's kind of attractive.
They're going to knock out. I mean, listen,
because one of Colorado and Vegas don't advance.
Yeah, you know for sure one of those teams are advancing. Would you? Who do you? I mean, I guess it all comes
I think I'd rather Vegas do the Central.
So you wouldn't face them in the round two potentially.
Yeah.
You'd rather face Edmonton.
If we're talking about ideal pathways,
right? Because now there's a chance that LA could upset Edmonton, right? And there's a chance that you could play LA. Now, hey, whether you think that's good or bad for the Canucks, that's in the eye of the beholder.
But the growing sentiment over these months has been, you only have to play one of LA or Vegas. Or sorry, one of Vegas or Edmonton.
But now you might be able to, you might have to play both.
Or neither.
But you could play both.
Yeah. It's like the mystery box.
There's a real mystery box.
The mystery box can be anything.
And the Chicago Blackhawks have taken a 4-3 lead.
This is what we've been saying. You don't need to worry about this Kings team. You do not need to worry about this Kings team. How have they choked this game away in 7 minutes?
Are the Kings not scared of the Knights or something? I mean, scared of the Stars?
Oh my goodness.
They want to play the Stars. Do the Kings want to play the Stars?
I'm so pumped up for Sunday.
I don't know what happened. I think they saw
all the hot takes of, you don't need to worry about this goaltending.
You know what? I think what happened was they looked over at the score, saw that the Ducks had beat the Golden Knights, and they're up 3-1. They're like, oh, yeah, this is done. And the Blackhawks are like, nope.
They're already listening to Taylor Swift. They're checked out.
All right. We were hoping to give you the last word on the playoff picture. We can't yet. So, unfortunately,
they called a timeout. Yeah. Calling a timeout, 13 minutes left in your season, is a panic move, man. I'm just going to call that right now.
Against a team with 12 shots on goal.
How many points in the season does Chicago even have? Did they crack 50? Oh, they got 51.
Oh, my gosh. All right.
That's unbelievable.
Man.
13 minutes left in your season. You're about to play game one against McDavid or Heiskanen. And you're like, you know what? Let's call timeout.
Well, and this is funny. The last few games of the regular season are chaos. Like, playoff teams don't care. Teams that are not going to the playoffs care because they want to, you know, get every stat they can. It's just absolute mayhem. All right. We'll talk more tomorrow about the playoff matchups. You'll know what the picture is coming up pretty soon, but we're way late already on the post-game show as it is. We're keeping fast Eddie Gregory from going home. He's Bick Nizar. He's going to be back tomorrow on the People Show. Playoff preview tomorrow. Is that what's going on?
Yeah,
pretty much. Yeah. Well, same thing on our show, Canucks Central, plus the Friday Mailbag and Yannick Hansen. Special thanks to Fast Eddie Gregory producing the show. As always, fantastic job. Thanks to every single one of you listening, participating, texting in, calling in. A pleasure, and we appreciate every single one of you. Can't wait for the playoffs. That's coming up on Sunday. Thanks for listening to the Canucks Central Post Game Show, presented by the number 5 Orange on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.